Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by OneCause, the creator of user-friendly fundraising software that helps nonprofits engage donors, raise more money, and save valuable time and resources. OneCause recently surveyed over 1,000 peer-to-peer fundraising participants to understand the key to fundraising success. Their findings are eye-opening. The study uncovers clear best practices for growing your peer-to-peer fundraising campaigns and empowering your fundraisers. Download a copy of the OneCause Social Fundraiser Study today by visiting www.onecause.com/responsive20. That's www.onecause.com/responsive20. Hi, Tim. Thank you for being today's guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I have been anxiously awaiting this conversation. You and I talked a couple of weeks ago. We decided to have a two-part conversation, so we've got you here earlier this week, and we're going to invite you back Thursday or Friday. We'll broadcast the second half of this conversation. But before we do that, before we jump into what your thoughts are, let's just ask you to introduce yourself to our listeners.
Well, great. Thank you very much, and it's great to be on with you today. A little bit about my background in fundraising. I actually began a 40-year career in the admissions and student recruitment business. And like many people in our generation of fundraisers, we morphed into fundraising. And that's kind of what happened to me. I started in that student recruitment student affairs part of higher education, and that was at Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia, and went on to graduate school at the University of Kentucky here in Lexington, and was immediately hired in the admissions office and was asked to lead up the creation of a new scholarship program, which connected me to the University Development Office. And at the end of that process, I was asked to join the development team of the University of Kentucky, and that's how I got into fundraising and spent the rest of my career as a fundraising professional, first at the University of Kentucky Medical Center, where I did annual giving and event planning and some lower level major gift work. And then I was asked by the university to start a development program for what was then the community college system that was owned and operated statewide by the University of Kentucky. And so I built that program from the ground up. And because of my student recruitment days, I had been on all of those campuses and was the only member of the university development team that had ever been on all of those community college campuses. So it was a wonderful opportunity for me to build a completely new development program from the ground up. And then in 1998, that system was actually separated from the University of Kentucky and was put into its own system. So I had the opportunity to create an entirely new system of higher education and build the program up again from the ground. And retired from that in 2016 after 18 years of building that new system and new program across 17 entities, 16 institutions, and 14 different foundations. So a very broad responsibility, and my scope was beyond fundraising. I had marketing and public relations and governmental affairs and strategic planning and all kinds of things. So very, very varied career. Then in 2016, I retired at the 40-year mark in my career and began a consulting practice that today focuses on major gift fundraising and strategic planning, with an emphasis on change and project management. So that's a little bit about my professional background. My other interest has been in the world of AFP, the Association of Fundraising Professionals. I've been part of that leadership structure at the chapter and international level for 34 years and served as the chair of the International Board of AFP back in 2007 and 8. And today I serve on the AFP Foundation for the U.S.
Yeah, so that's your one observation we can make as we kick off this conversation is that your professional career has sort of spanned what I would generally sort of what many of us would refer to as sort of the childhood and from the infancy to the childhood to the messy adolescence of what fundraising is today. Your professional career has sort of you have watched the fundraising become what it is. So to sort of tee up our conversation. And what is your take on sort of where fundraising finds itself today and where is it going and where do we anticipate? I mean, looking at things from a very global level, with AFP and also in your consulting work, where do you see all this going?
Well, I kind of think that we're at a pivotal moment in both the sector and in the profession. And it's not coming as any surprise to any of us, but I do think that we're at a point where we need to come up with strategies and solutions for dealing with some of the issues that I think we're going to confront in the relatively near future. And, you know, obviously that I'm coming at this from that professional background that I have just laid out for you, as well as, you know, having been highly engaged, you know, at this international level with the AFP and kind of listening to the conversations that have been going on and some of the issues that are being talked about. And, you know, so the first is kind of the overall nonprofit sector. And I started to dig into this myself because of the role that I'm playing with the AFP Foundation in looking forward at the leadership development issues that are confronting the fundraising profession. And it caused me to dig into some of this data. And one of the things that was surprising to me, though it shouldn't be, I suspect, is that the nonprofit sector is really a very significant part of the United States private workforce.
Yeah.
And I think we don't all necessarily grasp this. So let me just give you a few statistics as an example. So Johns Hopkins, their Center for Civil Society Studies in 2019, reports that nonprofits employ 12.3 million paid workers, which accounts for 10.2% of the total U.S. private workforce.
Yeah.
You know, and so anything over 5% is considered to be a major industry sector. So we are a major sector of the United States workforce industry. And the nonprofit world in the United States employs the third largest workforce of any industry. These statistics were from 2016, only behind retail trade, accommodation and food services, and on par with manufacturing. So, I don't think that we all quite grasp that if something happens to the nonprofit sector, it has a significant impact on America's workforce, and obviously the workforce issues inside the sector have a dramatic impact on the American economy and the communities where we do our work. And so it's really important that we take a look, hard look, at what the future of the sector looks like, and particularly what the workforce issues are in that sector, and then drilling down, what does that mean for those of us who are in the fundraising profession as a subset of that sector? So that's kind of where my head has been in recent years in looking at this and trying to figure out, you know, where we're going with all of this over, say, the next 10 to 15 years.
Yeah. So what, how many at the, I admittedly, I don't engage with a whole lot of the AFP world, but how much of AFP's time is being talked about sort of this big macro sort of stuff?
A significant amount. In fact, I think it's the dominant conversation that is going on.
Yeah.
You know, there obviously there are lots of subtopics beneath all of that in terms of, you know, who comprises the fundraising profession. So you've got, you know, the pipeline issues about who's coming in to the work of charitable fundraising. What are their characteristics? Where are they coming from? It's becoming a more diverse population. And so you've got all of those issues. And of course, that impacts things like training and education and development and research and all of that sort of thing. And then you've got the broader role that fundraisers, I think, play in the leadership of the organizations for which they work, and the role that they play in the communities where they work, and understanding that role and acknowledging how important it is, not only to the organization, but the community being served by that organization, how important that role is. And that if we do not address the skills and the talents and the leadership capacity of the people in these roles that serve these organizations, that serve these communities, and something happens to that pipeline, or we don't do a good enough job of preparing people to take over these leadership roles, then communities suffer and the beneficiaries of those organizations that are being served suffer. So it's a much broader topic than just what are we doing about fundraising today. This is a much broader, and to me, just in my view, this is somewhat of a national crisis. If we don't address this appropriately, we could end up finding ourselves 10 to 15 years from now with a nonprofit sector that cannot do its work and meet the needs of American citizens at a time when government funding is being cut back, pressure on nonprofit organizations is increasing, and you have this talent issue, the pipeline and workforce issues in the sector. All of that is kind of a perfect storm. And if we don't look at it, if we don't confront it and come up with creative and innovative solutions to it, we could all find ourselves, you know, somewhere that we would not like to be a decade or so from now.
So who assumes responsibility for this? So before we sort of begin to explore solutions and ideas about how to solve some of this, who really needs to assume responsibility for this? Is this a big sort of advocacy level thing that large organizations like AFP need to be thinking about? Or is this something that, is this an expectation that I would have of, say, the local, you know, if I've got a group of local development officers that are all, you know, one of them's working for the local community foundation here in my community and somebody's working for the, you know, Humane Society or something, is it an expectation I have for them? Or is it all the executives? I mean, who do we really sort of put at the forefront of all this?
Yeah, that's the big question, right?
That's
the big question. Who tackles this?
Yeah, and, right. Exactly.
And how do they go about tackling
it? Right. Yeah.
You know, the big national organizations, international organizations like AFP clearly have a role in this.
Sure.
But it cannot be solved fully by an organization. It really, I do think, has to be a private-public partnership. So, government has a role to play in this. And because the nonprofit world is relieving government of some of the responsibility in communities and regions and states and across the nation that the government would be addressing if the nonprofit sector were not there doing its work to relieve that pressure off of government or to pick up the slack and fill the gap where government is not responding to the needs of its citizens. So government has a role to play there. The business world has a role to play in that the nonprofit sector creates an environment in communities, in regions, in states, and across the country that are good for business. And so the business community has a responsibility in this, in ensuring that nonprofits continue to be healthy and vital in communities to create the quality of life that they want their employees to enjoy, which then enables them to recruit and to retain talent for their companies, which makes them successful. So I think it's everyone. And then, of course, those of us inside the nonprofit sector have our part of that responsibility to be transparent and be open looking at our sector and looking forward and thinking about its future and deciding how we join together with government and business to really come up with a solution to really seize opportunities. I don't see this as a negative. I see this as an opportunity for us to think broadly, think with innovation, and embrace everything that's coming forward in terms of the diversity of our population and our workforce, the power of technology, all of those things, and the globalization. You know, fundraising today is a global enterprise.
Right.
It's not, even if you're working for the Red Cross in your local community, you're connected to a global entity that is doing work around the world. And so, yes, you might be doing that work locally in one community, but it's part of a much deeper, greater, more pervasive fabric that's covering the entire globe. And so thinking globally about what happens here in the United States versus what's happening in Canada, AFP looks at this from a global perspective, for instance. And we look at what's happening here. We look at what's happening in Canada, what's happening in Mexico, what's happening in Europe, what's happening in Asia. And it all works together. And we do not sit in isolation here in the United States when it comes to fundraising. We're embedded in a global fundraising network. And so opening our eyes to that and understanding the implications of that as we move forward, along with the on-the-ground, issues that we're confronting in every community that we're in America, taking all of that together, I think we could really, capture some opportunity here and come up with some innovative solutions to deal with some of these hardcore demographic and workforce issues that we're inevitably going to confront. There's no way not to confront these because the demographics are what they are. People are going to be retiring in huge numbers.
Yeah.
The pipeline is thin. The talent in that pipeline may not be sufficient to pick up the responsibilities of those who are leaving the workforce at the top of their careers in huge numbers. And so therein lies the dilemma.
So before I let you go for this half of the conversation, what are those biggest? So if I'm the local
development director working for the community foundation, and I'm listening to this guy say that we've got a lot, you know, I'm anticipating a 25-year commitment for the rest of my career in this field. What are the bigger impediments that I need to understand? So I totally get if I presumably I've got a grasp of sort of the big macro picture, but what are the impediments that I need to understand and sort of see, and begin to think about tackling myself? What are those two or three or four, whatever?
Well, one thing, and this is something that I learned over my own career, is that the role of the development professional is bigger than fundraising.
Okay.
And that is not often fully grasped and appreciated, both by the development professional and by those who employ them. And so, you know, where we sit in the leadership structure, the voice that we bring to the table, the role that we play in influencing decisions and policy, all of that is part of our role. It's not just raising money. And unfortunately, that's how we are somewhat perceived by some, is bring a person in and set them loose to raise money, and that's their only job. Well, that, I don't believe, is the only role of a development professional, of a fundraising professional. And I think that goes to how we view ourselves. Mm-hmm. So understanding who we are as part of the organization, as part of the community, and understanding that our roles by their very nature are leadership roles. And so kind of it's a mind shift about who we are and what we do and how we do it. And then on the flip side of that is getting organizations, leadership, boards, CEOs, executive directors to shift their view of who we are, what we do, and what we bring to organizations, I think is a big part of this. One of the things that we learned as we have been assessing all of this through AFP's work is that development professionals really need a lot more training in a lot of other things outside of fundraising. They need to understand finance and budgeting. They need to understand human resources. They need to understand technology. They need to understand relationship building. And there's all kinds of things that they are impacted by in their work and that they influence in the work that they're doing, that they need a much broader understanding of all of the facets of an organization, not just what happens inside the development office. And so I think that goes to the training and education of fundraisers. How are we training them? And what are they being trained to do? And do we view them as leaders at the beginning of their career? And then, you know, the other issue, obviously, is retention. The turnover rates in fundraising are atrocious. People are leaving these jobs, you know, after two years, 3 years, and moving on to other things. And we are having a hard time holding people in fundraising positions. And there are a host of reasons why that's likely happening. And we need to grapple with those and understand why people start a career and then end it and move to something else fairly regularly. So those are just some of the issues that I think, you know, we need to confront. And as a professional, you need to kind of take that as a personal agenda. How do I view myself? What am I investing in myself as a professional and the skill sets that I bring to the table? And what role do I play in the organizations that I represent and the communities where I do my work? I think that's a big issue.
Well, that's a fascinating sort of place to sort of put a pause button on this conversation, because what I'm hearing is sort of this notion that we've sort of boxed ourselves in, almost like a form of self-marginalization or something. But it leaves us with sort of a cliffhanger, because it gives you an opportunity to come back on Thursday and sort of
explain to us how we might get out of that box. So,
absolutely.
So Tim, we're going to let our listeners off the hook for a few moments, and then we will come back later this week and continue this conversation.
Great. Thank you.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.